Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
What up? Welcome in. This is the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be making this part of your day, thanks so much. I'm Doug Gottlieb filling in for Colin Cowherd, who claimed to... He's on a boat. I'm sure there will be a wake surfing video in the very near future. A not-so-humble brag from our fearless leader, Colin Cowherd. All right, I got a lot to get to. NBA ratings down. I have some hypotheses. I think it's very important that we point out hypotheses. That is, those of us who paid attention in science class. I can't remember much anything, right? I don't know the sign for boron from the, the scientific table? Is that what it's called? Right? But what I do know is there's a difference between a hypothesis and a theory, right? A hypothesis is something that has yet to be proven. A theory is one, a hypothesis that has, on some level, been proven scientifically to be accurate. So this is more of a hypothesis and stuff. I have thoughts on the NBA ratings. Let's begin with this. The LA Lakers completely and thoroughly dominate the Portland Trail Blazers. And the dude in me wants to go, ha! Told you so! See? When I told Colin that Portland would be too gassed and that they didn't have a matchup for Anthony Davis or for LeBron James, I was right. You know? I almost feel like the bad guy in Scooby-Doo. And I would have gotten away with it, too, if it wasn't for those meddling kids. But then I stop and I take a breath and I try and figure out, all right, but what is the real takeaway? And I honestly watched a lot of basketball yesterday. And again, this is part of my hypothesis for why NBA ratings year to year are down, even on ESPN. Right? And the hypothesis basically goes like this. Basketball's on all the time. Right? It's on all the time. And so there isn't the level of intensity normally reserved for the playoffs. There isn't anything special. It's not only on at night. Like, literally, basketball is on all the time, which is great for those of us ball guys, and we can watch all the time. But for mainstream America, there just isn't the same sense of urgency when it's on every night and there's just game after game, and it's really kind of hard to tell the difference between the playoffs and the regular season or even in the scrimmages. It literally looks exactly the same. But one of the things that has happened in the bubble happens in the regular season, and frankly, it's happened a lot in sports, mostly in basketball, is our infatuation with offensive stats, right? Offensive stats. Stats can tell the story and especially to people who haven't watched a basketball game or haven't watched the basketball game, but they need some context. The perfect example is LeBron James, who in the first game statistically was dominant. But in the fourth quarter, there were several times in which he deferred and it was obvious that he had to take over. What I find fascinating about yesterday, and I'll say this about Milwaukee and about Houston, but mostly about the LA Lakers, is I do feel like so many people are missing it. You have to play to your strengths, right? You got to play to your strengths. It's no different. Yesterday is National Radio Day, right? What are my strengths? Hey, I believe that I'm one of the best interviewers in radio. Those are my strengths. I know what my weaknesses are. I won't share them with you, but we also won't do them. Right? Colin's strengths are He has really strong opening segments, a lot of really interesting business metaphors. I have some of that. It's not as strong as Collins. That's why he plays to those strengths. You listen to Fox Sports Radio, and different shows are portrayed differently, right? Play to your strengths. The number one thing I learned when I was trying to play professional basketball, and if I could do it again, when I played coming out of college, I had a reputation of a guy who couldn't shoot. And so you know what I set off to do? Proved to everybody I could shoot. Do you know what that was? A mistake. That's what amateurs do. Amateurs try to prove to you that the scouting report you have on them is completely wrong. Whereas professionals go like, yeah, okay, I can shoot. Like every once in a while, I'll knock down an open one. But there's no reason I can't make a ton of plays without shooting. Play to your strengths. That's what pros do. And what is the strength of this LA Lakers team? It's not three-point shooting. I think that's been made obvious. Right? What's lost in the palaver about does LeBron have it anymore? And I think, you know, I'm going to play for you a cut in a second that does kind of explain what it's like to be in your mid-30s trying to compete with guys in their 20s and earlier 30s that haven't played as much basketball as he's played, aren't as big a body as he is. But what this – forget LeBron's scoring. The Lakers have the best record in the Western Conference, which it's inarguable it's a tougher conference than the Eastern Conference, right? And it may not be at its peak this year because Golden State chose not to really compete because the Spurs are in transition because, you know, Porzingis hadn't played in a year and a half and Luka is just in his second year. Like, they're not yet there, but they're close. You can see Phoenix starting to figure it out, but it took them, you know, having 3 months off and in the bubble till when they finally kind of figured it out. The Pelicans feel like they may be a year or two away from having full Zion. So the West is not what it's been or what it may well be, but it's still pretty damn good, right? They had the best record in the West. Why? Why? The whole year they haven't been able to shoot. That hasn't changed. The whole year LeBron James has been up and down in terms of his burst athletically. The whole year they struggle with Anthony Davis finishing games and being aggressive in the fourth quarter. Danny Green has looked like the oldest man on earth all year. Kyle Kuzma's been up and down. How could they possibly have the best record in the West? What's their strength? Ha-ha! The defense. They've been the best defensive team in the NBA. And while, yeah, they lost Damian Lillard, he hit a couple deep threes, and they got confused, and Melo hit a couple, and C.J. McCollum hit some shots. They're just amazing in game one. The fact is that in spite of that late barrage by the Portland Trailblazers and the win by the Blazers, who won a score in the 120, scored 100 points. And last night it was 88. We do this thing where you only play well by anybody's estimation if the stats say you scored a bunch of points and had a bunch of assists. And if you throw in some rebounds, meaningful or meaningless, it doesn't really matter. That's what we care about. But what's the truth? The truth is, if the other team doesn't score, none of your ineptitude actually matters. It just doesn't. None of your ineptitude matters. And I sit here and look at the Lakers, and I feel like so many people are missing what they did last night is the reason that they were the one seed. It's the same thing that it's what's been lacking with Houston. And granted, they were playing a very young Oklahoma City team, but if you watch that game in the fourth quarter, they decided they're not going to score. And that's what happened with the Milwaukee Bucks, who have been an elite defensive team. Yes, did Giannis get it going early, and did they get out to a big lead, and they had Orlando on their heel? Sure, all of that can be true. But we say this all the time, Colin and I. In the NFL, you're not going anywhere unless you got a top 10 defense. And in the NBA, the truth about the Warriors during their championship run and when they won 73 games, they were the best, analytically, they were the best defensive team in the NBA. When that fell apart, so too did the Warriors. So too did the Warriors. All right, we got a bunch to get to today. Coming up next, I'm going to give you my thoughts. My thoughts on exactly what's going to happen. Exactly what's going to happen tonight with the LA Clippers.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
Speaking of getting the dub, this is LeBron James on why it's so much harder to get dubs in the playoffs this year.
I've had some great teammates in my career. AD is one of those unicorns, and he does things that some of my other great teammates are not capable of doing. But in the same sense, I've played with Dwayne Wade, and he could do some things that, you know, the AD is not capable of doing. And also play with Kyrie Irving. He can do some things that D-Wade and AD is not capable of doing. So I've had the luxury of playing with some great players, and that's just three of them.
That's just three of them. He went on to say that this season is like three seasons. And while I understand the logic behind it, with LeBron going like, hey, man, it's been a lot, three seasons. Like, you know, you're trying to turn around a franchise. You have a new coach. They finally got it going. They were the best team in the NBA before it shut down. Then it shuts down. Then you got to fire back up. Then you got training camp again. Then you got like preseason games again. Then games, now playoffs. It feels like three seasons. But I actually don't think it necessarily feels that weighty for other guys. That's your mid-30s. Wait till you get to your 40s, right? You're like, man, I used to dominate that. I used to crush that. Like, yeah, dude, now you're in your mid-30s. I used to be able to play all day. When we're kids and you're a basketball player, like, I grew up playing in a place, Miles Square Park in Fountain Valley, California. My dad would get me up. We'd go and play. And I was little, so to get in, like, I was, like, 13 years old, maybe 12 years old. And he would take me to Miles Square. He'd call a game. He'd get me in a game. And he watched me play a little bit, and then he'd leave me after the first game, he'd coach me up, and he'd leave me $5, and I'll be back later. And then, you know, I'd go across the street, get a slice of pie or two, and a Gatorade. It was like $2.50. Do that a couple times a day, just stay there and play ball. And you could run on, how many times, when you're a kid, you can run on fumes on anything. And try that in your 30s or your 40s. You're like, oh my God, I can't believe I played on cement. I can't believe that I tried to eat a hot dog and a Coke and play basketball. How did I do this? It's just different. It's just different. You play three games in your 40s or 30s, and it feels like six games. You play three games when you're in your teens or your 20s, it feels like a warm-up. So I do think that all of this stress, all of the season and whatever, it's probably more taxing on everybody, but especially taxing when you've been doing it for 17 years and you're LeBron James and, you know, you're carrying 260 pounds of pure muscle. I think it's a lot. And I think there are times which he's exhausted, and that's why he can't be his regular dominant self.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Doug Gottlieb in for Colin. This is The Herd on Fox Sports Radio. John Middlecoff will join us next hour. Three and Out is his podcast. All Ball is my podcast. He does football. I do hoop. You can call us. I have a call-in number. Colin has a call-in number. 800-292-5150. Sure, what the hell? I don't know. Will he answer it? Somebody will answer. I don't know if I'll put you on, but I'll give it to you. Saw somebody tweet me. They're going to play golf at Miles Square Park. Miles Square Park is exactly what you think. It is a square mile in the middle of Fountain Valley, California. Why do they call it Miles? Because it's a square mile. It's just a big-ass park in the middle of Orange County. Before, they actually built a park called the Great Park. It was pretty great park, but just not called the Great Park. Anyway. Middlecoff, Mario Ellie's going to join us. Mario Ellie's going to join us? I'm not sure I know the story of him blowing the kisses every time he hits the three. Mario Ellie, Rockets hero, former USBL alum, will join us later on the show. All right, I want to get to this. So Dez Bryant went and worked out for the Baltimore Ravens. Now, I understand, look, Baltimore is not just talented, but they're loaded up with talent that fits their quarterback and their system. And I thought Colin, like, look, we joke about Colin sometimes saying things which is like, yeah, you got to just – got to roll with it. Sometimes he sees things in sports we don't see. I thought his analogy, and I sent him a text like, this is really strong. He compared Giannis and Lamar Jackson, and I thought that was brilliant. Now, my thinking is similar. Like, he's like, well, you can't get, either guy can get behind in the playoffs. True. And but why is that? Because Giannis lacks that one primary skill. The worst thing he does is the thing you may need most to win at the highest level, which is shooting the basketball. The same thing goes for Lamar Jackson, which is the one thing you need to do best is probably the weakest part of his game, which is throwing a football consistently, accurately, just snap it to him, you know, read it, throw somebody open. Don't get me wrong, Hollywood Brown takes off the top of a defense. And their use of tight ends so he can throw inside the numbers is fantastic. And obviously they can run the football because he's a freak athlete and they have a stable of good running backs and an outstanding offensive line. But the reason that people were down on Lamar Jackson is not just what you see in the playoffs. You still see it rear its head in the regular season, which is there are just times in which he lacks normal accuracy. He's obviously improved, but there's just a wild scud throw. A lot of times he goes through his progressions, and maybe it's his fundamentals which have improved. I don't know. But there are just some wild misses. So when there was talk about Antonio Brown joining the Ravens, I was like, yo, that ain't going to work. Antonio Brown is a lot of things, and I think he's an incredible talent. Yes, he's a pain in the ass off the field, and yes, he's suspended half the year, and you're going to have to just hold your breath and hope he doesn't, you know, defame the name of your franchise. But he's a freak talent at wide receiver. The problem is that Antonio Brown has gotten more targets in the than anyone else in the NFL, I believe, three of the past 4 years. Obviously, last year he couldn't. Like, he's a 150-target-a-year guy, and that's not how the Ravens play. So they brought in Dez Bryant, which does make sense because you're like, hey, what if Dez Bryant's going to get back in the league, it's going to have to be like Anquan Boldin. You know, Boldin hurt his knee in college. I think he hurt his knee in the pros. Like, Boldin couldn't run, but he's brilliant as a football player. He was big, strong, tough, competitive, and he became a really good blocker. More than anything, he was just an old head who you could throw it to or not throw it to. He just kind of did his job and stuck in the league. Like, remember, Anquan Boldin walked away from the league like a year and a half ago for social justice reform, not because he had to, because he's like, I'm kind of done with this. He was with the Bills. He wanted to do something else. And I think that's how Dez wants to reinvent himself, and I think that's smart. But when you go and work out for the Ravens, and they're like, that was a really good work. That was a heck of a workout. Wait, are you going to offer a contract? No. It was a really good workout. It was a good workout. Like, yeah, that doesn't bode well for Dez Bryant with the Ravens, right? When you want them to come out and go like, that was awesome. Sign this paper, and we want you on the Ravens today. Look, it's good for Dez to put himself out there. And it shows he's not trying to become, going back to being, you know, the highest paid, the best wide receiver. He just wants to play football. I get it. But it also on some level, doesn't look good when you're Dez Bryant and they don't offer you a deal. I don't know if the Ravens really need another guy. They obviously just want to kick the tires on guys, but I think Dez at least is a better fit than Antonio Brown.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
Last night, the Lakers thumped, and I mean thumped, the Portland Trailblazers. Now, look, it's just one game. We cannot freak out, right? Freak out with one loss. You can't freak out with one win. You know, you can't say, well, because Portland won game one, series over, Portland's better. The same is actually true when the result is the opposite. So I look at, and, you know, you can go and look these stats up. They're readily available in terms of offensive statistics, defensive statistics. You know, it's fascinating to me how we we kind of lose sight of what makes a team special, right? Like what makes you can in fact break you, but you have to, on many levels, fall back on what you do best. That's the key to being a professional. That's the true key to being a professional is pros. And this is how it was described to me in basketball, but I think you can use it in your job as well, which is, to me, the key to being a professional, right? Key to being a professional is pros do what they do well. Amateurs, well, they just try and, you know, they just try and prove you wrong and prove everything you have as a scouting report to be somehow incorrect. And, well, that's that's not going to work out well for you. The Lakers in the regular season are the best analytically. You know, if you look at defensive, general defensive advanced statistics, right? They're the best defensive team in the Western Conference. So when you look at the Lakers, so many times we freaked out because LeBron didn't look to score late in the game. Danny Green couldn't hit the broadside of a barn. They don't have Avery Bradley, who had become a vital weapon both ends, but finally shooting the basketball well. He'd been a bit good defender all year, but it was finally making shots, you know, before he called it a year because of his fears of COVID. Right? So I look at this and I'm telling you that what you saw from the Lakers last night is that's who they are. They're just a very, very good defensive team. Very good defensive team. And while their ratings have dropped a little bit since they've been in the bubble, generally, okay, they're number three overall in the NBA, number one in the Western Conference in defensive rating. Only the Bucks and the Raptors are better, but the Lakers for the season, okay, for the 71 games they played, are a better defensive team statistically than the Clippers. And then the next closest team in the West is the Utah Jazz. Or excuse me, the Oklahoma City Thunder than the Utah Jazz. So the story of game one was, man, the Lakers can't shoot. I'm not sure if you guys have been paying attention, but the Lakers haven't been able to shoot all year. Well, how the hell they win all those games? Well, Anthony Davis is just better, and LeBron James is just better, and they stop people. And I'm gonna give somebody credit who I think had the right thought, just terrible execution. Magic Johnson. Right? Do you remember what Magic Johnson said 2 years ago when they were putting together a team with LeBron James? And you're like, those are some really weird pieces. Let's go get Rondo and let's go get this guy. Let's bring back KCP and you're like, what? And his thing was, hey, nobody plays good defense. We'll be the best defensive team. Now, their execution wasn't great because, and look, Danny Green can't hit a broadside of a barn. He's not the defender he used to be, but the idea of Danny Green is much better than the idea of what they were throwing out there previously. But Avery Bradley fits that if he's playing. Mike, all of their, Rondo's like their worst defensive guard. But he, at least reputation-wise, has a good reputation defensively, better than actually how he plays. JaVale McGee and Dwight Howard, like, why do they have these guys? Because they rebound and play defense and block shots. The thing about basketball is they actually allow you to try and stop the other team from scoring. I know. It's a really hard one because most guys who cover the NBA now, they're like, well, how many points did he have? How many assists he had? How many rebounds he had? Well, then he played well. That's not actually how it works. Not actually how it works. And you know, we work in a business where I remember the first job I got nationally. I was hired by a man named Dan Steer, who now works for NBC Sports. Dan was really, really a longtime college basketball producer. When Vitale was at his peak, Dan was in his ear. He's his producer. Dan hired me eventually and Fran Fischilla the same year. And his thing was like, look, man, tell me why. Don't tell me what. I can see what. Tell me why. Right? He also used to say, If you told a story once in a game broadcast, you didn't tell it. Right? People watching the second half didn't watch in the first half, et cetera, et cetera. You can't tell it enough. And never assume. That was a big thing. Never assume. Right? All of these things, kind of resonated with me. To have an opinion and to tell me why and all of these things. But, listen, he really, really pushed you to not use cliches. Don't use a cliche. But, sometimes cliches are cliches for a reason. Like, it's a cliche. Like, we use cliche. Cliche is kind of like the word mediocre. The word mediocre isn't actually a bad word. If you say, how was that? Your wife makes you a meal. How was the meal? Oh, honey, it was mediocre. Mediocre means average. But if you hear the word mediocre, like, man, mediocre. Well, thank you. Yeah, I slaved all day in the hot stove and made you eggplant parm and mediocre. Like, no, mediocre is average. I didn't say it was below average. I didn't say it was dog food. I didn't say it was kibble. I didn't say, you want me to take out the garbage? You cooked it. You take it out. I didn't say that. I just said it's mediocre, it's average. Cliche is the same thing. A phrase or opinion that is overused and doesn't have and betrays lack of original thought. Sometimes, though, cliches are when the going gets tough, the tough do get going. And defense does, in fact, win championships. It just does. You don't believe me? What if I proved it to you? Yeah, what if I proved it to you? I mean, look, the teams, you're not winning anything without a top five defense in football and in basketball. Last year's champion, the Toronto Raptors. Right? The Toronto Raptors. Granted, they were helped out by Golden State getting injured. Right? When the Golden State Warriors were peak Golden State Warriors, they were the best or second best defensive team in the league. That's the truth. Analytically speaking, their defensive ratings have always been off the chart. How have the San Antonio Spurs been able to somehow make the playoffs, not this year, as their talent got depleted? Why? They were the best defensive team in the league. And we are waiting on the LA Lakers to find themselves. They have. They got to get Anthony Davis to carry them offensively when LeBron cannot and score just enough points to win. And the defense can happen every night. LeBron can't carry you every night. Anthony Davis doesn't seem to be able to carry you every night, but the defense can keep you in every game so that it keeps you around for if LeBron and Anthony Davis can hit big shots. That's the working theory or hypothesis or whatever you want to call it. That honestly was Magic Johnson's plan. Look, Magic didn't know what he was talking about sometimes, and he didn't have a great plan with coach and execution and personnel, and I get it, but it was what Magic said. And the cliche is true. You ain't winning anything about defense. So I watched last night, and I could go into, LeBron doesn't play well, or he doesn't play well offensively, or Damian Lillard dislocates his finger, or was it Portland? Are they out of gas? Probably some. Is the Lakers making adjustments? Probably some. I think that coaching staff is wildly underrated. They've done an excellent job this year. But I also think they just got they continued on with who they are. Hey, man, the shots are going to go in or they're not going to go in. But you know what? We can stop them. That's what we are actually built for. That's why we were the best team defensive rating-wise, in the West this year, third best in the NBA to Portland and Milwaukee, right? Two other elite teams. And that's why we can win a championship.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
All right, let me work in Mario Ellie, who joins us in The Herd. Men, are you feeling okay? Neither am I. If you're not ready to give up, you want to feel more energized and lean, try M-Drive. Check it out at mdriveformen.com. That's mdriveformen.com. Mario Ellie, two-time NBA champion, longtime NBA assistant coach, joins us in The Herd. Mario, what's this like for you, a guy who you grinded your way to the NBA, to becoming NBA champion, then you're a coach. This time of year, usually Summer League over, and now it's kick it. You got playoff games on at all hours of the day. What are your thoughts on how the bubble is playing out?
Doug, first and foremost, thanks for that great introduction, my man. I'm just super excited. Kudos to the NBA for doing an outstanding job with their creativity and their idea. I mean, I think it's going on maybe a month and a half, 2 months, with no positive tests. The games have been outstanding. I think it's wide open to win the championship because there's really no fans there. It's just like a glorified AAU tournament, and whoever's hot at that time, to me, can go far. You mentioned the Rockets. Their defense the first two games have been amazing. Amazing. That's what I've been looking for, especially when you have a small lineup. If you have a small lineup, you got to get out there and
get after
really guard, really switch aggressively.
Yep.
And they just loaned to the ball. I mean, their defense to me has been the difference in their first two games.
I completely agree with you, and I am somebody that says, like, because D'Antoni has never – like, I was told when he's in New York they didn't even have defensive drills, right? Like, because he's just – that's not what he's been about. It's when your head coach isn't – you can say I'm about defense, but unless you are – and guy, you don't fool guys – but, like, one of the things – first of all, P.J. Tucker is just a warrior, right? Like, he just outplays people. But I think what they've done smartly with Harden is you want to – he's actually a decent post defender. And that's where they've kind of tried to hide him defensively. And, frankly, not having Russell Westbrook, who athletically should be a great defender but isn't really, all of that has made them better defensively.
Great point, Doug. And you're right. James Harden is even taking charges. I love the scheme. They're allowing OKC to shoot the three. They're really playing boxes and elbows. And the thing that's disappointing to me with OKC, they can't attack the switches. And why do you have Steven Adams at the free throw line catching the ball?
I don't know. I don't know. Put him at the block every time.
Exactly.
And throw him the ball. But man, he's
6'10". Why do you have him coming off stagger screens? The Rockets are switching anyway. His mismatch is on the post. I know Billy Donovan got coach of the year, but I'm like, P.J. Tucker last I remember is 6'5", 6'6". Steven Adams is 7 foot, maybe close to 300 pounds, and you have him catching the ball at the free throw line. Then you're on the same page, Doug. Put Adams down low where he's around the basket constantly, where he can get tip-ins, offensive rebounds, and he has a nice little box game. So I'm trying to figure what OKC is doing.
Well, I'll give you the opposite side to it, okay, is the one of the things you and I both know, when you play small, you get away with a little bit more. You can be a little bit more physical. And the other part, and the two other parts to it is, one, Steven Adams, as big as he is, he's never really been refined as score. Like, he has not developed that part of his game. And I don't know how much, you know, so oftentimes now guys are trying to develop the ability to shoot the three, which he can't, but he just misses far too many easy ones. But then the last thing is, and I do believe this to be true, like, the thing that hurts Oklahoma City the most is Chris Paul is a great pick and roll point guard. Like, he's as good at using the ball screen as anybody who's ever done it. But because Adams isn't really a roller, and because they're just switching and they got guards, it kind of takes away what Chris Paul does best. So some of that is because of the scheme. Some of that is because Steven Adams just couldn't score even if you locked him in the gym.
That's a great point. I was never worried about the Rockets in the early rounds. I worry about when they – I don't know who they play in the second round. It's either the Lakers or Clippers. I'm not sure. But you got medium to big guys on both those teams who can take advantage of mismatches. You got Anthony Davis and LeBron. You try to switch on them, they're going to punish you, whether it's pass or kicking out. And then you got the Clippers, Zubac. Zubac can do stuff around the basket. Montrezl Harrell can. Kawhi's a beast. Don't matter who you switch on him, he can take you to the box. He can face you up. And Paul George also. I'm with you, Doug. With OKC, they have limitations. They don't have good shooting. And you're right about Steven Adams. He's not fresh around the box. He's just – you give it to him under there, he just goes up because he's big and stronger than you. He really doesn't have a box game. But as you go deeper into the playoffs, you got bigs who are going to punish you for these switches.
No question. What do you think about the Lakers? My general takeaway is, like, people are freaking out about the lack of shooting. They haven't shot it well all year, and you take Avery Bradley off the team, we shouldn't be surprised. But what they have done well, They've actually done well in both games, which is defend. That's their calling card. But is it enough for you to win big if they can't shoot?
Yes, because you got two of the top five players in the NBA. I get tired of all these people on TV say LeBron needs help. He doesn't need no help. You got Anthony Davis and you, two of the top five guys in the NBA. And that's what I want to see from Anthony Davis, being active around the goal, attacking, not selling for jump shots, getting to the line, impact on a big impact on defense. And you mentioned, Doug, the Lakers are a solid defensive team. Granted, Howard and McGee don't give you the offense, but they do give you the basket protection and the rebounding for extra possession. When you give good teams extra possession, at the end of the day, they're going to make you pay.
Yeah, they absolutely are. Where are you? What's wrong with the Clippers? The Clippers were supposed to be this deep team, great defensive team. Granted, haven't had Patrick Beverley, but they're just getting torched by Luka.
Luka's a special player, and I'm mad that he wasn't on the MVP ballot. I sort of paid attention to him when he was at Barcelona overseas. A lot of my friends looked at me crazy. I said, this man should go number one. He should be the number one pick. Vlade Divac will still have his job if he were to pick Luka at that spot. The kid is special. You know, Doug, I don't know if he played overseas. If you're special, they get you at 15 years old, and you're playing grown-ups like Tony Parker. They got Tony Parker, all these guys overseas who play professionally young. So when they come to the NBA, these guys are ready to go. You know, Luka ain't missed a step when he came from Barcelona to the NBA. Now that Rick Carlisle, who's one of the better coaches in the league, puts the ball in his hand, and his vision and his decision-making is second to none. Now, I put him up there with Magic and LeBron. His vision, when he goes in the paint, he knows where everybody is at on the floor. And him and Porzingis are pretty good. That was my surprise team in the West. I had Toronto in the East and Dallas, because those two guys are very good players. And you mentioned in the pick and roll, I mean, Porzingis popping. He can roll. He can mess with it. You got Seth Curry playing some good ball. I mean, they're a dangerous team, even though I think the Clippers will end up beating them, but it's not going to be easy.
I mentioned you played in Ireland, Portugal, and the USBL. Give me your best story. Give me your kind of go-to, you can tell me on the radio story. I'll share with you one.
Ireland, Doug. Ireland.
Go.
I mean, we'll practice once a week with my teammates, drinking a warm pint of Guinness at 11:30 in the morning. The bar is packed. People are just getting hammered over there in Ireland all times of the day. Great teammates, great people. I just remember my teammates after practice, hey, Mary, let's go to the pub and have a warm pint of Guinness. That's what we would do. We'll end up being there maybe 3 or 4 hours longer than we expected, but just fun, great people. I had an outstanding time out there, and I want people to go out there and visit Ireland. The people are great. Dublin's great. Cork, Belfast. Just an amazing country. Just had a blast. But just the drinking, though, Doug. These people drink all the time. The pub is packed all the time. And you rarely see accidents out there. So I had a blast. That was my first European experience playing. And the people were great. I had just a great time over there.
Okay. I'll give you my best USBL story. Is that okay?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. So I'm playing. This is in 2000. And I'm playing.
What team are you playing with, Doug?
It's the Oklahoma Storm. Oklahoma Storm. Brian Gates, who's an NBA assistant, was our head coach.
Brian Gates, that's a good friend of mine.
Yeah, he's great dude. He's got some. You have triplets, and I think he has triplets as well. I think
we both have triplets. Yes.
See, I'm pretty good at what I do. So, B Gates is our coach, and we had some gems on this team, right? We had Willie Burton. Okay.
Oh Lord.
Willie was just a professional scorer, right? We had Willie Burton. We had, what's my man's name? He played at Louisville. He gave Jordan like 31, and then Jordan gave him 31 the next day. LeBradford Smith. We had LeBradford Smith. We had some dudes on this thing. Okay. So we play one night in DC. Okay. And in DC, it was nuts. We had Darren McClinton was the other point guard. He was from DC. A couple of the other guys were from DC. So we played at George Washington University. It was wild. It was like something out of a and one mixtape. Dudes running out on the floor. Right. So So we go back to the hotel. They're like, hey, we got a game tomorrow night in Philadelphia against Daryl Dawkins' team, the Philadelphia Dogs, okay? Valley Dogs. So we're like, all right. So all of a sudden, Brian Gates wakes us up with a phone call, and the drive from D.C. to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, Lehigh University, where they played, was, I think, like 2 hours. We get a phone call at like 8, like panic, like, hey, the game's at 11. We're like, what? Yeah, the game's at 11. It's to get, like, summer camps in to see the game, whatever. We got to go. So we all come downstairs. We get our stuff. It's like 8:15. We roll out. We go to Bethlehem, PA. We roll in. Now, this is 2000. I had not yet taken – I don't know if Starbucks existed then or didn't. Dunkin' Donuts. Nobody had eaten. So we're like, hey, yo, we got to get something to eat. We got to go play this game. And the place is packed with a bunch of, you know, little kids that are in summer camp, and they're whistling and they're yelling and throwing. Anyway, so they bring in Snickers bars, hot dogs, and Cokes from the concession stand to feed us before the game. Now, it'd been a long time since I had a Coke and a hot dog and played hoop, but everybody's done it when they're growing up. All right, fine. We go out, we win the game. We come back afterwards, and we're flying out that night from Philadelphia, and we got to get our per diem, which in the USBL at the time was $25 a day. And I kid you not, Mario Ellie, that I look into my envelope for my per diem, and there's like $18.75. And I was like, yo, where's my $25? They're like, well, you had $25, but then you had a Snickers and two hot dogs and a Coke before the game, and so we took that out of it. I was like, what?
Wow.
That is not exactly NBA per diem stuff that you lived on.
Hey, we did the same when I was with the Albany Patroons. We got stuck in Chicago, and we were flying to play Grand Rapids. So we got there an hour and a half before the game, and we're busy eating at the concession stand, just like you did, Doug. They making hot dogs for us, nachos, Coke. So we had that before the game. And just like you, Doug, we went on and kicked their butt by 20. After eating hot dogs and nachos before the game. CBA, USBL, it's all the same story.
It is all the same story. You're famous for your kiss of death after making big threes, part of two NBA championship teams. Marielli joining us. I'm Doug Gottlieb. This is the Herd. What? Oh, three championship teams, sorry. But two with the Rockets. But famously, like, making threes. Obviously, you would be a great player today because your ability to guard multiple positions and make shots and just kind of space the floor. But what is that like? Like, look, I wasn't a shooter, and you see, and now guys are shooting at such an unbelievable clip. But what is it like in the playoffs to be sitting there knowing when it comes to you, you're open, you're supposed to step in and make it? How do you process the emotions of it, taking me back to when you were a player?
Just putting in the work, Doug, growing up in the parks in New York, thinking I'm Magic 5'4", you know, envisioning that, trusting the work. And it also helps, Doug, when you're playing with one of the top 50 greatest in the world, and Hakeem Olajuwon. He allowed all of us to get open shots because he couldn't be guarded one-on-one. Rudy implemented that offense when we all came, Sam, myself, Robert, the four in and one out.
Yep.
You know, I mean, the one in and four out. So Dream was that one guy. If you didn't double him, he was going to get 50 or 60 points. He was that good. So when you doubled him, we had our spacing great. It was either me, Maxwell, Cassell, Kenny Smith, or Rob Laurie just out there salivating, waiting for the ball to come to us. Because we know if once Dream gets off to a good start, they're going to send a double. So we in all our positions. So if it goes to me, they close out to me, I'm swinging. If they don't close out to me, I'm shooting. So we had a great system, and Dream was the key part of that system because he would punish the offense because you couldn't guard him one-on-one. So once they doubled, our spacing was great, and Dream was a willing passer at that time. He trusted his teammates, so he would kick it out to us, and we didn't want to let him down. And then that kiss of death you mentioned, it was Danny Ainge doubled off me in the backcourt because we were holding the ball for the last shot. So I shoot to the corner. They're not leaving Clyde. Robert flashes to half court. So it's me in the corner, Danny Shays and Olajuwon. So I get the ball, and I know Danny Shays are not leaving Dream. So I'm a set shooter, so I got time to set my feet. And when Danny Shays saw me about to release the shot, he closed out a little too late. And as a shooter, Doug, me and you are shooters, you know when you shoot a shot and you know it feels good and it's going to go in. So everything about that shot felt good, hit nothing but the bottom of the net. Looked at my buddy Joe Klein. We've been blowing kisses to each other since game 5. And, of course, I got the last kiss called the kiss of death.
Just basketball question. Did you watch the ball or do you watch the hoop? I was watching
the ball. The rotation was great. I didn't want a Kawhi Leonard that hit the rim 9 times before going dug. I wanted a nice all-netter, and it did go all-net. And it was funny, after I made the shot, I really didn't feel my teammates jumping on me. I was so caught up in the moment with Joe Klein, staring at him and blowing him the kiss of death. And I watched the video, Sam, Robert, everybody's jumping on me. But I really just locked in at the moment of Joe Klein over there mad as hell, turning red after I made the shot.
Obviously, you played in the Jordan era. You coached in the LeBron era. There are some that believe, like LeBron, game one, a little passive down the stretch, right? Like driving in and looking to kick out. Do you hold that against him, that sometimes he's passive as opposed to Jordan, who is seen as the ultimate alpha? Now, Jordan, in order to win championships, as those of us who remember, he actually had to learn to pass, whereas LeBron seemed to have to learn to take over. But do you hold it against LeBron that there are times in which he's passive in terms of scoring?
I do. And that's, to me, the difference in the two players is the mentality. I'm Jordan all day as the greatest of all time. Competed against him, guarded him plenty of times. Love LeBron. He's on my all-time five. But when you're alpha dog, Doug, and your team needs you to just ratchet it up, I got to go with Michael Jordan, because Michael Jordan knows how to dig deep, deep, deep in his soul, whether he's sick, whether he's hurt, whether he's had a bad game. He just goes to a place where I see no other players go, where he's just so mentally tougher than everybody. You know, and that's my thing with LeBron. LeBron got all the skills, 6'9", 250, just graceful, don't miss games. But it's the mentality that to me, Jordan never been to a game 7 in the playoffs, I think, in the finals, they said.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing to me, going against Magic, Bird, and all this great talent back in those days. But to me, I have to go with Jordan. I love LeBron, but Jordan's mental, to me, because he'll do whatever it takes to win. You know, LeBron to me is just nice. Okay, I got the shot, but this guy got a better shot, so I'm going to give it to him. No, if it's the shot, Jordan don't care who's open unless he gets double and triple team. He's going to take that shot.
And sometimes it's a great point. Mario, great stuff, man. Awesome to catch up. Love to do it in person. In the meantime, thanks to Meach Mir, guest in the herd.
Thanks, Doug. Keep up the good work, buddy.
All right, the pleasure is all mine. 3-time NBA champion, of course, Kiss of Death author, Mario Elie. Ireland, Portugal, USBL to CBA to NBA. This is crazy. It's crazy.